July 29th, 1910, in Slocum, Texas, started off like any other Friday in this rural East Texas community. But before the day was over, one of the worst racial atrocities in Texas history would happen. It wasn't long after sunrise that the shooting started, and the shooting continued throughout the day. It's been called the Slocum Massacre, the day when the local white community whipped up into hysteria, attacked the black community, killing many, forcing the rest to flee for their lives, and their homes were put to the torch. If you haven't heard of the Slocum Massacre, don't fault yourself. Texas has been silent about what happened here. There is no state historic marker at Slocum explaining the tragic events for travelers who might stop. It's not taught in Texas history classes, and it's not even mentioned in the Texas State Historical Association's Handbook of Texas. Some say it didn't really happen. And others allege that there was a cover-up of the Slocum Massacre, a cover-up that continues even today. This is a special edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. To remember or forget the Slocum Massacre. Saddler Creek still runs in Anderson County, Texas, near where Slocum once stood. It was a modest farming community about 20 miles southeast of Palestine, about 100 miles east of Waco. Saddler Creek runs through the thickly wooded and swampy area, just as it did over 100 years ago, the day when the African-American community was attacked. It was here at daybreak near the creek that the first shots were fired. Three teenagers, African-Americans, Charlie Wilson, Cleve Larkin, and Lusk Holly, were walking down the road and crossed paths with a group of about a half dozen white men. Without warning, the men opened fire. Larkin was killed, Wilson was wounded in the leg and chest, Holly escaped injury and fled with Wilson into the swamp. Soon there were more packs of armed men combing the area, shooting black people on sight, going from cabin to cabin, working their way through the woods and continuing their methodical executions. Members of Constant Holly Juwade's family were killed that day in Slocum.
I think it was probably the scariest day of my great-great-grandfather's life. You're trying to protect your sons, yourself, your wife, your children. I think it was terrifying.
Lee Craven is also a descendant of a survivor of the attack on Slocum.
One of my relatives was in fact pursued inside his home and shot point blank range with a rifle while he sought refuge under a bed.
Slocum Massacre, late July 1910, basically a bunch of white folks, mobs of white folks in groups ranging from 12 to 100 to 200, started going around Anderson County, southeast Anderson County primarily, and killing black folks, killing as many African Americans as they could find, as many as they could chase down over a 24 to 48 hour period.
E.R. Bills is a Texas-based author. His book, The 1910 Slocum Massacre, An Act of Genocide in East Texas, digs into the causes and fallout of the attack. He says it's impossible to determine how many people were killed in the massacre.
There is no official number. The newspaper reports originally suggested 24. Eventually, when there were indictments handed down, they were for 7 casualties. But the sheriff of the day, or of the time, said that that most of the bodies would be found by the buzzards. There were too many. They were everywhere. And strangely enough, no more were found after he said that. It appears that some of the perpetrators of the massacre went around covering the evidence, and in fact, some of the black families were retrieving their deceased loved ones to bury them and prevent further abuse. So it's not clear, but oral tradition suggests there were at least 200 killed. And it also led to a racial expulsion. Probably thousands fled. A racial expulsion, that's basically when people flee an area, you know, because they're being persecuted because of their race or their ethnicity. You know, it's happening in parts of the world now. In that period, when the white folks started killing all the black folks they could find, obviously the surviving African Americans fled. They fled their homes, they fled their properties, their jobs. Some of them fled with nothing more than the clothes on their back. One descendant describes her ancestors telling her, you know, that they had just heard the white folks had gone crazy killing black folks, so they just started fleeing. And in fact, many of the victims in the end were shot in the back. I mean, it wasn't enough that they were fleeing; they were going to kill them, regardless.
The local sheriff of Anderson County at the time, William H. Black, reported that men were going about killing Negroes as fast as they could find them, and so far as I was able to ascertain, without any real cause. All known victims were unarmed, and most were shot in the back. No whites were injured. Reports tallied between 8 and 22 were killed that day, all African Americans, and the real number of fatalities is unknown. There is evidence to suggest that African-American casualties could be as high as 200. Holly Juwade is a descendant of who appears to be the number one target of the white mob.
I am the great-great-granddaughter of Jack Holly and the great-granddaughter of Marsh Holly.
Jack Holly was born a slave, but after emancipation, he was able to become a prosperous landowner and a businessman in Slocum. He was able to survive the attack, but his family had to go on the run. In fear, they even changed the spelling of their last name, and all their property was lost. Holly Juwade has worked for years trying to make sure the victims of the Slocum Massacre are not forgotten, and she says she and her family have been hitting brick walls from the local and state historic commission to gain recognition that Slocum happened.
No one wants to hear it because no one wants the story to get out. That is, I truly believe that.
During the interview, sitting next to Holly Juwade is her cousin, Khaleesia Holly Williams, and on her lap is her toddler son, Ray Anthony Williams. Holly Williams is working with her cousin to bring attention to the 1910 massacre that almost wiped out her bloodline.
We're not trying to stir the pot, per se, but all we're trying to do is bring awareness to what happened and justice, as my grandfather would say, for justice sake. It's a story that needs to be told. It's my heritage. It's my family's heritage, my son's heritage. And people need to know what happened.
But what did happen on that day in 1910 and the critical days leading up to the massacre? It's unclear, but there are stories, and most have a man named Jim Spurger in the middle, the local tenement farmer who has come to be known as the main instigator of the Slocum Massacre.
I don't know what his malfunction was, just full of hate, evil, and I've heard from my grandfather that he referred to my great-grandfather Marsh as just an uppity nigger.
Constant Holly Juwade says she's heard stories about Spurger her entire life and how he was the mastermind behind the Slocum Massacre.
He was spreading rumors that the blacks were going to uprise in some form or fashion, whatever that looks like. And the whites went through town and bought up all the ammunition and cut the telephone wires and headed to Slocum.
Whether it was Spurger or not spreading rumors, somehow the local white community had come to believe that trouble was afoot and that the local black community was arming itself and getting ready to attack them. The white community was in a state of hysteria and panic.
But many of the white folks were convinced that was happening. Many of them put their children and wives in churches while they went around killing these black folks, put them in the churches and schools, hold them up with guards for their own protection. So some of the white folks believed an uprising was in the works. In the end, it was discovered just to be rumors.
Newspaper reports of the day are the most accessible way to get an idea of the events during the attack, but they are a deeply flawed record with inaccuracies warped by the lenses of prejudice, pressures of the day, and the thirst for sensationalism. The first press reports coming from Slocum declared that a race riot had erupted. The Associated Press reported on July 30th that 12 were killed in a race riot, 2 were white and 10 black. Also inaccurately, the AP story reported that 200 black men were arming and more bloodshed was expected. According to the report printed on newspaper front pages across Texas, the armed Negroes were intent on cleaning out the entire white population. The front page of the New York Times printed the next day was a much more truthful reflection of the reality in East Texas. The Times reporter wrote that as many as 25 black residents of Slocum were killed, and they were unarmed and shot down like sheep without reason by a mob of 200 white men. Sheriff Black was quoted in the Times saying, "Men were going around killing Negroes as fast as they could find them, and so far as I was able to ascertain, without any real cause. These Negroes have done no wrong that I could discover. There was just a hot-headed gang hunting them down and killing them." After the initial headlines, the follow-up stories of Slocum fell to the paper's back pages. There were no printed explanations for what happened to that race riot, or was there ever really an armed mob of 200 black men looking to wipe out white families in East Texas? But there was some reporting that there was a Texas Rangers investigation and indictments of white men who led the Slocum pogrom. And it wasn't long after that the story fell out of the newspapers entirely. And then this painful and embarrassing chapter in Texas past was skipped in the classrooms when it came to teaching Texas history, and it was a virtually forgotten account, unavailable to future generations. But cousins Holly Jewade and Holly Williams knew the story of the Slocum Massacre because it was kept alive by their family's oral tradition.
I heard the stories about Slocum just at family gatherings, just sitting around the table and talking about where we came from.
I remember my dad taking us to Slocum, my brother and I and my mom, and showing us, you know, where his grandfather lived and all that. And then just telling us the story of Slocum as much as he could that was age appropriate, that we could understand. And I just remember looking at over all the land and my daddy being proud, saying, you know, my grandfather owned all of that, our great-grandfather. On all of that and about the story. He just told the story with a lot of pride. Coming out of slavery to own the only granary, the only dairy, the general store. Jack and Marsh did pull themselves up by their bootstraps, but they did it too well, which caused envy in the white community.
The Slocum Massacre, the newspaper accounts, when you put them all together and read every one of them, they differ on everything that happened.
Jimmy Ray Oldham is the chairman of the Anderson County Historical Commission. He is opposed to the placement of a state historical marker at Slocum, acknowledging the massacre.
There was no race riot to start with. It was just personal things between the blacks and the whites that didn't fall in the line of just because you're black, I'm against you and all that. They just want a marker to show that something happened there and they killed blacks and got away with it.
Also opposed to an official state historic marker for the Slocum Massacre is the Anderson County Commissioner for the area, Greg Chapin.
It's just lack of evidence. I mean, it's all hearsay, no factual. You know, everything that the commission works off of is all, you know, basically evidence that have been proven, you know, as far as documented by some of our peers, as far as judged, you know what I mean, as far as not just hearsay. So we've looked at all the information, as far as all the ones that's been supplied to us. Everything has contradicted themselves totally, you know, according to how many were killed, how many weren't killed, you know, how many blacks, how many whites, what it was, you know. So there's no, from everywhere from the New York Times to the local prints, you know, nothing was consistent. Well, then no one was ever prosecuted on it. No one was ever convicted of it.
Commissioner Chapin is correct. No one was prosecuted and no one was convicted. But there were 11 arrests and 7 indictments.
There was indictments and different things, but it never went through. You know, it's all that you're guilty, you know, proven guilty, innocent till you're proven guilty. That it never went to that part. You know what I mean? It was a lot of indictments and speculations and fingers pointed.
Fingers were pointed, and many were pointed at Jim Sperger. He was one of the men indicted in the aftermath of the massacre. Another story about Sperger leading up to the attack has to do with the custom at the time of being essentially drafted from time to time to do manual labor to maintain the county roads. The men could also pay a tax, but Hard currency was tough to come by at the time and was rarely paid. According to reports, Spurger had heard that a black man, Abe Wilson, had been given the task by the county officials to pass the word around to Spurger and other white men in the area that they would be needed to report for road work duty. To Spurger's mind, this was the ultimate insult, and it would not stand. Author E.R. Bills.
The guy who was appointed to summon people for road work, Abe Wilson, there's no evidence that he ever actually talked to Spurger and said, you need to report for county road work. James Spurger just heard that he'd been appointed, and he was offended. And so when county road work started, he showed up with a shotgun, said he'd brought it to shoot some squirrels on the way home, but refused to do any work and took like a coin and flipped it at the white county road work supervisor and said, you know, he wasn't going to work.
Weeks later, Slocum came under attack by Spurger and others. This is a special edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio, telling the story of the Slocum Massacre, the 1910 attack on a black community in East Texas, and the efforts to bring some justice to the victims today. I'm David Martin Davies. Jim Spurger may seem like a perfect villain when looking for an explanation as to why Slocum was attacked, but it really wasn't so unusual of an act for East Texas and across the South in the post-Reconstruction era. Slocum stands out only because of the scale of the racial injustice, but acts like the lynching of African Americans were common. Between 1885 and 1942, 465 lynchings were recorded in Texas, 339 of them of targeted blacks. Texas had the third highest number of lynchings in any state, according to the Texas State Historical Association.
Lynching went far beyond punishing alleged criminals. Lynchings were also about, and some would even say mostly about, terrorizing the black community.
Carlos Hill is a professor of history at Texas Tech University and is focused on the history of lynching in America.
It was about instilling fear of whites. It was about, you know, the message that most lynchings sought to send was stay in your place. And by stay in your place, that meant don't challenge Jim Crow segregation. Don't challenge disenfranchisement. Don't challenge, in general, the status quo of the South, which is whites were on top and controlled things and blacks were on the bottom. And so it's no doubt that lynchings, in terms of the kind of social message that it meant to communicate, was about terrorism and about staying in one's place.
The lynching of black men was not only tolerated, but it was encouraged by the white establishment of Texas. In Dallas, after the March 3, 1910 brutal lynching of Alan Brooks, the Dallas Morning News covered the story with the headline, "Dallas Mob Hangs Negro from Pole at Elk's Arch." Brooks had been dragged from the courthouse while his trial was in progress for an assault on a white child. The paper praised members of the mob for their swift justice and criticized the courts for, quote, delays, reversals, and failures.
What made lynching such a phenomenon is that from the courts to the criminal justice system, police, there was a tacit acceptance of it. And that is what made lynching become a phenomenon where 5,000 Americans were lynched. If there had been local, state, and federal prosecutions of lynchers, it would have never grown to those proportions.
In East Texas, there was a lynching of a black man every month for 6 months leading up to the Slocum Massacre. Lynchings were common, and they were popular. It was an accepted practice for members of the mob to fight each other for scraps of the victim's clothing or pieces of the hanging rope to be treasured as souvenirs. Another possible factor that led to the Slocum Massacre was an event that happened several weeks before, on July 4, 1910, and which inspired violence against black people across the nation. A boxing match featuring the heavyweight champion Jack Johnson and former undefeated heavyweight champion James J. Jeffries, a man known as the Great White Hope. In the build-up to the fight of the century, Jeffries was quoted in newspapers saying, "I am going into this fight for the sole purpose of proving that a white man is better than a Negro." Johnson easily won the fight with a knockout. Of course, Johnson was black, and Hill says he represented the worst fears of those invested in the white power structure, particularly in the South. After Johnson easily won his title defense, there was a wave of targeted violence and lynchings against African Americans simply because they appeared to be gloating about the fight and having too much admiration for Johnson.
Whites feared that he would become a symbol of resistance. Because Jack Johnson was so flamboyant and rubbing it in whites' faces, they had to respond in the way that they did. Or else other African American men and women would have seen him as a way that the citadel of white supremacy could be breached. And that was the problem with Jack Johnson.
July 1910 was a time of great racial anxiety and a climate so volatile that someone like Jim Sperger could have easily taken advantage of it by inciting a mob to violence. Author E.R. Bills says there was almost another riot the day after the massacre when Sperger was arrested by an Anderson County Sheriff's deputy. It was the opposite of a lynching. A mob had formed to protect Sperger.
As the Rangers were trying to take him to the county jail, there were folks that tried to obstruct them. They told one of the sheriff's deputies that he wouldn't make it to the county jail with Sperger. And at one point, there was a group of 75 white folks that, you know, lined up and challenged the law enforcement personnel. And one of the sheriff's deputies' name is Riley Reeves. And he said, "Look, we're going to open fire. We're going to use our guns if we have to. We're taking him to the county jail." He basically stood them down.
But Judge B.H. Gardner, the elected district judge for Henderson, Houston, and Anderson counties, wasn't going to allow those who perpetrated the massacre to escape the justice of the law. He convened a grand jury in Palestine to investigate the attack, and Sperger, along with six others, including his brother, were indicted. It appears that this was the first time in Texas that a white man was indicted for the murder of a black man. But an indictment is far from a conviction, and Sperger would never be tried on those charges, because elections have consequences.
Judge Gardner is trying to prosecute these guys, and the sheriff, Sheriff Black, has been his ally, and Governor Thomas Campbell has sent this special prosecutor, and they're building this case. And within 7 or 8 months, there are new elections. Gardner's voted out, Black is voted out, Thomas Campbell is voted out. So the special prosecutor is removed from the case by the new governor, and so nothing happens.
Eventually, Sperger and the others would walk away from those charges, but that's not the end of the story for Sperger. He would eventually meet up with Judge Gardner.
James Sperger punched him. Judge Gardner was shaking Sperger's hand, so he took his free hand and punched the judge.
There never has been justice for the victims of the Slocum Massacre. Constance Holly Juwaid says her dream one day is seeing justice come in some form.
Undoing the cover-up so everyone, at least in Texas, knows what happened. To me, that's justice. Mm-hmm. And to also get it in the public schools, that's justice. Justice looks like a formal acknowledgement in the form of a marker. There are some who are buried. We don't know where. They were not properly funeralized. So this would, to me, would be a memorialization of them, their lives, and their efforts.
The closest that the state of Texas has come to recognizing the Slocum Massacre happened at the state legislature.
Members, this is an important resolution. If you could.
On March 30th of 2011, the Texas House unanimously approved a resolution acknowledging the event, but this was mostly a symbolic action by the legislature. It has no bearing of law or weight in court. It does nothing to actualize a state historic marker for Slocum. And then, days later, in Palestine, over the Anderson County Courthouse, the Confederate flag was raised in celebration of the local connection to the Civil War. After some embarrassing national press attention and outcry from the local African-American community, the Confederate flag was grudgingly taken down from the courthouse.
The Slocum Massacre has basically been an event that has been swept under the rug in terms of local history dissemination.
In addition to being a Slocum Massacre descendant, Lee Craven is also a former chair of the Anderson County Historic Commission. She says there is a double standard in Anderson County when it comes to recognizing history.
If you have the Confederacy hoo-ha-ha, brouhaha, hooray, then there is the other side of it, in which people were oppressed and all these awful things happened to them. What about their voices? And that's the balance that's been missing in so much of our history, not just East Texas history, American history.
Now for an update. This Texas Matters documentary on the Slocum Massacre first aired on Friday, January 16th. And just 2 weeks later, the Texas State Historical Commission met to consider the Slocum Marker along with 173 others. The commission voted unanimously in favor of the Slocum Marker. I spoke with Constance Holly Jewade that day about the victory.
Today means so much to me because it validates the work of my ancestor. Validate their lives so their death did not have to be in vain. It's formal recognition from the state of their life work, just a validation and acknowledgement of everything they did for us. I feel like I'm on the road to recover the legacy that Jack Holly left for his descendants.
With this approval, what happens next? I mean, this is just one step, right?
Yes, this is just one little step toward getting complete justice. This is a step toward justice, but this is not justice.
In voting in favor of the historic marker, the commission had to act against the wishes of Anderson County officials. Anderson County made it clear in the application packet that they did not support the marker. County Commissioner Greg Chapin wrote in the letter in the application that, quote, Anderson County cannot support the marker. And Chapin said, if it did get approved over his objections, it wouldn't last long, that vandals would make quick work of it.
I think it would go up one day and it'll be down the next and be thrown in the river, you know what I'm saying?
Well, that prediction turned out to be false. On January 15th, a Texas Department of Transportation work crew installed the historic marker in Anderson County, recognizing the Slocum Massacre, and so far, it's still there, no vandals. And there will be an official dedication of the marker on January 16th as part of the Martin Luther King weekend celebration in Anderson County. But the story isn't over. There are still too many unknowns about the Slocum Massacre. What actually happened that day? What can we tell if there is actually an investigation? And now this is part of official Texas history, but will it be a historic footnote, or could this be a marquee historic event that will serve as a critical cautionary tale about injustice, the price of intolerance, and what happens when majority rule turns into mob violence against a vulnerable population? Slocum is not an isolated event, but now it takes its tragic place alongside other racial atrocities that are remembered in United States history, like the 1906 Atlanta race riot, the 1921 Tulsa race riot, and the 1923 Rosewood, Florida massacre. We will now remember Slocum, but how will we remember Slocum? That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. And you can write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. That's where you can find past Texas Matters programs to listen to. And you can find us on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.